Hey guys, this is Steven, and we're back with the history of FMW with Bahu. This is going to be episode 2. Today we're going to talk about 1989. This is the actual launch off of the FMW name. As you know, my name is Steven. I'm from the, you can find me online at indywrestlingintl.wordpress.com, and I am joined by the amazing Bahu. You can find him at bahufmw.com and fmwwrestling.us. He is the preeminent FMW historian of the English language, and this has been a really great project so far, and I hope to keep it up. So, Bahu, we're going to jump right into 1989, where we left off. Onita had jumped back into wrestling, and he had partners with the WKA, and he had a match with Aoyagi. Now, quickly remind us, what was the WKA, and how did this first match, what was the result of this first match that was a few months prior to the FMW debut?
The WKA was the World Karate Association, so Onita pretty much partnered with them because he was having his own feud with UWF, even though they didn't really want to participate in the feud. But Onita wanted to show that he could take on kind of like a real fighter, you know, someone with real fighting skills and everything. So he contacted the World Karate Association, and they set up a match with Aoyagi in the summer, where Onita, it was a strictly pretty much just a karate kind of style match, no wrestling moves, but Onita ended up using wrestling moves, getting disqualified. So they agreed to, after that, they set up another match, an actual wrestling match for the fall.
Now, the WKA, were they doing worked wrestling matches, or was this a shoot karate MMA league?
It was a karate league. They would have specific wrestlers participate in it. Like, they had Shinya Hashimoto participate and everything like that. And those might have been worked. They might, you know, I don't even really know. But they had certain wrestlers kind of, it was kind of like the early predecessor to UFC or MMA kind of style. But yeah, so it was kind of having their own legitimate matches. And like I said, the wrestlers that participated, it might have been work, but the matches were, they were actual karate fighters. They were legitimate matches.
Okay, cool. And was there any reason why Onita and the FMW group chose to partner with the WKA?
It was the only one really in town. It's a well-known organization. Onita was just kind of building his name, really, at the time. And, you know, he wanted to show, like, WKA was known as legit, and that's what he was trying to show as he was trying to start his own angle with the UWF promotion, which was known as, legitimate fighting.
But, okay, great. And finally, I read a thing on your site. One of the reasons to stay partnered with the WKA was that the WKA gave them a ring to use?
Yeah, he didn't have his own ring, and rings are really expensive to set up and everything, purchase. And so it was kind of his way into starting his own promotion, having his own match, and not having to buy a ring or anything like that.
All right, awesome. Now, Aoyagi and Onita, they had their first match on July 2nd, 1989, and then they signed the rematches that would both take place in October of 1989. So, when did the hype start for these new shows?
So it started actually. So Onita announced at a press conference that he was creating the FMW promotion because, like I mentioned earlier, he had a match with Aoyagi, which was, you know, DQ because he was using wrestling moves. So he wanted to have a wrestling match, kind of a mixed style of wrestling and martial arts. And so he created the FMW promotion, Frontier Martial Arts Wrestling. That's where the martial arts comes in from. He created this on July 28th, 1989, and Aoyagi was at the press conference, and Aoyagi attacked Onita after they got into a shouting argument, and Aoyagi kind of left him bleeding and everything to set up their match to set up the two matches for October.
Now, the first show, which would take place on October 6th, was in Nagoya. Why was Nagoya chosen for the first show?
That's Oyagi's hometown. So it was kind of like Oyagi's home base. He'd get the first one, and then Onita's home base of Tokyo would be the second show.
Okay, great. Now, the first show, and for those who want, if you search Onita Aoyagi FMW, you'll find the tape of these shows on YouTube, and it's a great show to watch. It's maybe a one-hour tape. But anyway, the Onita Aoyagi match is listed as a different style fight. What were the rules of this fight?
So it's kind of, like I said, a mixture of mixed martial arts and wrestling. It was... five 3-minute rounds. So, you know, kind of like in a boxing kind of match. So they go to their corner and everything, but they were allowed to use wrestling moves, suplexes, clotheslines, you know, things like that on top of, you know, Oyagi using, you know, kind of the kicks, the judo kicks and the chops and everything.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a mixture.
And there were also rounds, right? Like 2 or 3 minute rounds.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, cool. So yeah, after every, you know, 3 minutes or so, they'd go to their corner.
Now, when Onita came out, he was accompanied by Tarzan Goto. Why was Goto chosen for this role?
He was going to be the number two guy. Onita had, you know, as I mentioned in the last episode, Onita had a relationship with Tarzan Goto through All Japan. You know, they had both toured throughout the United States, although at different times. And Goto was out of a job. He was no longer with All Japan. He was a big guy. Onita saw him as he was a competent number two guy to follow him and everything. So he brought him in as the number two guy of the promotion.
Great. And real quick, just about the match, I actually just watched this a day ago. If you want to just let people know, like, what was the style of this match and what was the outcome?
So pretty much is Oyagi ends up getting a TKO win in the first match. You know, it was a hard, I mean, it was a really enjoyable match, you know, especially for 1989, where, you know, it's Oyagi pretty much just beating the crap out of Onita. Onita trying to fight back and everything. And then at the end, Oyagi gets the TKO win, and Onita goes after him afterwards. And there's this big brawl with both sides, the World Karate Association guys and the FMW guys brawling in the ring to end the show.
And during the match and during all of the matches, Onita winds up bleeding from the ear, from the lips and stuff. Were these real cuts or was he cutting his ears and stuff?
I think he was cutting his ears. I think it was predetermined and everything. But he was getting the crap beat out of him. But I think it was to show the effect and everything.
Yeah, and also after Onita gave him these massive headbutts, and Aoyagi came up leaking like a faucet. It's actually very violent for not being a death match, as we would say. So the show would be announced as a 4,000 person advance sellout. With indie wrestling not being a big thing at this time, was this seen as a great show, or was WKA draw, like, was this a normal draw for them?
No, it was a big show. I mean, it was the first show, so they didn't really know what to expect. But like I had mentioned, Onita's name was starting to get bigger and bigger with the UWF angle, where they, you know, didn't let him, you know, they didn't want him to participate on their show. Onita was kind of known as the outlaw, you know, kind of a rebel and everything. So his name was kind of getting out there. It had already been established 10 years earlier with All Japan, so people knew the name, but he was kind of making his own name at this time period. So it was kind of starting to pick up steam and everything. So when the show did really well in both areas, because if they hadn't, the promotion would have probably never continued. It would have been considered a flop if both shows had flopped.
Awesome. Now, excuse me, also on the card, if you read the card on Cage Match, there's they have listed a 4-way female male match between Witch Warrior, Tsuchiya, Matsuda, and Sato. What was this match really?
It was a handicap match. It was pretty much Witch Warrior was an American woman. I actually tried doing research on her, could not find anything on her after the show. But it was just a way to get her over and just destroy the FMW Dojo girls, just to get their, you know, to have their first match and everything. And they just got destroyed pretty much. And so it's pretty much just to show dominance for Witch Warrior.
Now, a quick question. So when was the dojo opened?
It was open in September. So Onita created the promotion FMW in July, and then he knew he needed, you know, he needed an undercard. He needed people mixed in on the show and everything. It couldn't just be him, even though the focus was on him, but he needed, you know, four or five other matches on the show. So he knew he needed to create a promotion, you know, and just especially back then, that's what you did. You know, New Japan and All Japan, they had dojos. So FMW created their own dojo in September, and they included both males and females, which, no, you know, New Japan and All Japan never have done still to this day.
Were there any other big names in that first class?
Not big names. I mean, as you said, Toshiya, you know, she ended up, you know, being Megumi Kudo's top rival. And this is the first class. Flying Kid Ichihara, you know, he was with IWA, and, you know, he was with FMW to the end. You know, not a big name, but, you know, a name, you know, people that follow FMW would know. You know, he was in the first class. There were some other names, but no one big or anything like that.
Cool. Now, if you watch the show, most matches are pretty short. Only the main event goes about 12 minutes, and most of the matches are between 3 to 6 minutes. 3 to 6 minutes. Why were the matches so short?
They knew they weren't good workers, pretty much. They knew that, you know, like I said, it was the dojo girls. They were just starting up, pretty much, or it was American wrestlers that weren't very talented. So it's pretty much just a work rate aspect of, we know this isn't going to be good, but we have to have, you know, so many matches on the show. So we're going to make these as short as possible, because the focus was Onita and Oyagi.
Cool. And, 1 second, I've got a bit of a cold. Okay, back to it. Let me make a note of that. I got to edit that out. 1 second, 14 minutes.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, I make notes. Okay, there we go. Going back to the card, I noticed there's a lot of WKA style, or there's a lot of matches with WKA talent. Were these undercard matches, were they shoot karate fights?
No, I believe they were actual worked matches and everything. It was they were learning the style of professional wrestling at the same time, you know, and we'll get into it in a little while. But, you know, Yagi brought in his students and everything, pretty much to get ring time and to get a payday, essentially.
And were they already, like, at this point, did they have the idea in mind that they were going to go to a hardcore style, or was it just kind of they were figuring out as they went at this time?
Figuring out. I mean, the very, very first shows, you know, this is going to be a mixture of wrestling, karate, you know, the very first shows. Once the WKA guys, Yagi and all them, pulled out, then it was kind of... even before that, really, they knew they had to get something. They knew they had to do something to stick out, and that's when they began the hardcore style matches. And plus, like I mentioned, a lot of the workers weren't very good. You know, the hardcore matches, Onita had learned, you know, kind of protect and disguise, you know, bad workers by having a different style match.
Great. Now, on your site, you mentioned I saw this and it kind of just didn't make much sense to me. Jado and Ghetto, who are now the bookers of NJPW, and they would go on to be FMW stars and a bit of indie stars, they were present at the press conference for this first show. Who were they at this time, and why were they there?
They were pretty much actually nobodies. It's just kind of a coincidence that they would become somebody. But they were Universal Pro, Universal Pro wrestlers, which was a promotion that pretty much led to Michinoku Pro, and Onita had gotten in contact with them to use them and Super Delphin, who was, you know, who was maskless at the time, you know, before he was Super Delphin. He got them to, you know, fill out the undercard and everything, and so they were just happened to be invited to the press conference when it took place.
Awesome. And finally, I only asked this because I see this name all over. Jimmy Backlund was on these shows. Who was he, and how did he get on these shows?
He was Jimmy Del Rey. That's who he's best known as from Smoky Mountain and WWF in the mid-90s. He was a Florida independent worker at the time, and they had reached out to Florida independent wrestlers. I think him and Billy Mack, they got the call to come in for the first couple shows. And Jimmy Backlund pretty much stayed for another year or so afterwards.
Awesome. And the show ends, it goes off, there's a giant brawl, there's blood, it's quite a spectacle. I would tell anyone to watch it. It's really great to watch. And four days later, FMW would run Tokyo, the famous Korakuen Hall. I can never say that right. For the final match between Aoyagi and Onita. Was this match any different from the others?
Was it different than the previous match 4 days earlier?
Yeah, I mean style and things of that nature.
It was the same style, yeah. It was a different style match again, where it was a mixture of karate and wrestling and everything like that. It was just, the difference was that it was Corrigan, and that was more of Onita's home base, so it was like his home turf and everything. And then in that match, he came away the victor after pretty much it was to finally put away Aoyagi after three attempts.
Now, I'm just curious, when they started all this, this is a weird question, did Aoyagi have any problem losing the finals?
No, I think it was always agreed upon, he would lose to Aoyagi in the first match, and then he would put Onita over in the second match. I think that was the agreement going along, all along and everything when they started FMW.
Cool. Now, during the match, if you watch it, the fans are definitely behind Onita. After being out of the spotlight for a few years, where does this fan base come from?
Like I said, it was really just from the media and everything. He had picked up steam by going to the UWF promotion and wanting he pretty much wanted to enter the building and challenge the UWF guys. And they said, no, you can't come in. You don't have a ticket. Get out. And so, people saw that story in the magazines and in the newspaper that, this top promotion, this big promotion is scared of Onita. And so it kind of picked up after that just that steam and everything. So, it is a surprising thing, because you watch, if you ever watched the first show or the Corrigan Hall show, people are chanting for Onita before the show had even started and stuff. And, like you said, Onita hadn't really established himself too much as far as matches go, but, just the media had picked up and he had a lot of steam going into the show.
Cool. And also, for those who are curious, this is actually the debut of Onita's blue trunk, white shirt getup as well, which he would have for quite a long time. Now, with another advance sellout of the show, there were signs that FMW had the legs to carry on. You write on your site that the next day there was a dinner held to talk about the future of the company. Can you tell me about this dinner?
So he pretty much he had a dinner afterwards to pretty much go over, okay, these two shows were success. If they had been failures, it probably wouldn't have continued on, but they were successes. So it was kind of the plan. He spoke with Wally Yamaguchi and Miki Ibaragi, and they just kind of went over, okay, this is going to be a legitimate promotion. We're gonna hold tours. We're gonna, we need to, get more wrestlers. We need to, kind of establish this style of how are we gonna be different? How are we gonna have, set ourselves aside, kind of stand out from All Japan and New Japan? And that's kind of when they decided we kind of need to have death matches. At first, kind of the chain stuff, a chain match, or, bring in the barbed wire, things like that. So they kind of came up with what FMW would become at that dinner.
Cool. Now, with the dojo being opened the previous month, was it really this moment that created FMW, or was it just kind of a nice story?
Well, like I said, it was created in July of 1989, and then if it had failed, it would have just failed, been forgotten, no one, and that's it. And Onita probably tries getting into some other company at that. But once those two shows were success, and they didn't have much money also. So these two shows being a success, they had the money to continue running and everything like that. Because like I said, they, if it had bombed, then they wouldn't have been able to afford, you know, bringing in wrestlers from other countries or, you know, touring or whatnot, getting a tour bus and stuff like that. They needed, you know, these shows to be a financial success to actually make FMW become what it is.
Cool. Now, on these shows, one of the first foreign talents signed for the future tours would be Dick Murdoch. Now, I've never really known Dick Murdoch, but he's a bit of a legend in ways. Who was the person who got him on these shows?
It was probably Tarzan Goto, if I had to guess. I don't really know exactly who, but like I mentioned in the last episode, Tarzan Goto had just recently come in from America. So he had contacts all across the Southeast and everything like that. So he probably reached out to somebody that knew, you know, had, you know, Murdoch's number and everything like that, and just made a call. Do you want to come into Japan, work a couple, you know, shots, get paid good? And, you know, Murdoch agreed to come.
Cool. Now, was there an idea that FMW would try to compete with NJPW, AJPW? Like, what would make FMW different from the Pioneers Sensei company?
Well, they were never going to become New Japan, All Japan. They didn't think that, especially at that time, they didn't think, you know, it really was just an upstart company trying to make money, trying to make Onita have a name. You know, that was Onita's focus, was, you know, being a well-known person, being a celebrity. That's what he wanted. He wanted the money and the fame that came with wrestling. Of the purpose, it wasn't to ever be number one or number two or anything like that, because New Japan and All Japan were so far ahead. But they were pretty fast in overcoming Pioneer Sensei. Pioneer Sensei did not last very much longer after FNW kind of got started, because FNW kind of took away their audiences. It was just kind of a, you know, standard independent promotion that didn't have anything sticking out for it. And when with FMW, Onita and the hardcore style came along, you know, it kind of took away their audience and just killed it.
Cool. And now the two shows, they would be put on a hour-long tape, you know, a VHS tape. Do you know if this tape sold well?
Wait, which show was this?
The Nagoya Tokyo Grudge Match tape.
The Nagoya show never actually made tape. It was in a handheld. A fan in the audience took video of the first show, and then the Tokyo show, WKA had the footage because they had participated with the show and everything, and they actually released it like 5 years later, when FNW was really popular, around 94 or so. So the tape actually didn't make air, and, you know, until 5 years later, but they pretty much just cut up the entire undercard. It's only like the undercard probably gets 20 minutes altogether, and then the whole Onita aspect is, you know, 20-30 minutes, so it's half the tape right there.
Oh, I saw a tape. I guess they might have used clips from the first WKA show from July then.
Yeah, there was that other tape too, where they just there's two tapes. There's the full Corrigan Hall show, and then there's WKA also released Matt, you know, the show, the main event of the Corrigan Hall show, as well as the previous July match that Onita had where he got DQ'd. So it's kind of like the first match and then the third match. The first match is setting up the third match, but nobody had actual videotape footage other than the handheld to publicly use for the Nagoya show.
Okay, gotcha. I'm sorry about that. Now, if you go to Japan now, you're probably going to wind up at the Tudokan store. It's this wrestling memorabilia store, and they have aisles and aisles of tapes from the 90s. How big was the VHS tape scene at this point? Do you know?
Yeah, no, it was pretty big. I mean, it's what kept, you know, it's what kept people being able to follow the promotion that weren't able to go to the shows and everything. The only issue was that they were super expensive. They were $100 back then. So if you, you know, people were able to get a hold of them and everything. They were, you know, at their local wrestling stores and whatnot. They were just really expensive. So you had to really have a passion of, I want to see this, I want to keep up with it. So it didn't gain, I wouldn't say it gained any real new fans, but it probably kept, it it was allowed the fan, the current fans, to keep up with the product if they weren't able to go to, you know, every show in at Corrigan Hall every month or so.
Awesome. Now, so FMW, they would sign a series of shows in December. I think it was four shows. The next show would be in Osaka. It would be in front of a crowd of 1,500 people. Was this seen as a very strong showing?
Yeah, it showed that it wasn't just, those two shows weren't a fluke and everything, and that touring was going to be able to work. You know, it was just kind of the beginning of Onita Mania, and pretty much, and just, you know, the numbers just kept rising and rising. But this is the very beginning of the number. Wow, look, this is a really impressive number. We could keep this going and going. It's the beginning of the bubble, pretty much.
Cool. Now, this first show was headlined by Matsunaga, the future Mr. Danger. He hadn't yet bleached his hair, versus Onita in another different style match. So were their intents to keep the different style karate versus wrestling going?
Yeah, while they were in contact with working with the WKA promotion, they were going to keep the different style going. Now the undercard matches, I think like Dick Murdoch was in a chain match and things like that. You know, they had already, you know, they had started using the death matches aspect for the poor workers, or, you know, the workers that need a little help and stuff, the Joe LaDukes and stuff like that. But yeah, they were able to keep the different style match for the rest of the December tour, pretty much, with the WKA guys. After the start of January, though, they pretty much got rid of the different style matches.
Cool. And just to note, there was also another handicap women's dojo match. Did FMW hope to launch the women's section of the company immediately?
They just wanted filler at the time. They just wanted, you know, to get people, you know, to get people, get their girls work and everything like that. They knew they weren't good workers, though. They wanted to bring in foreigners, which they did. They brought in, Jacqueline. They brought in Delta Dawn. They brought in Tarzan Goto's wife, Despina Montanagas, to work with them and everything. You know, it's just filler. They wanted, maybe one day they'd be good, but they knew then they weren't very good at the time. And so it was just to kind of be different also, just to have something different, you know, because there was no men and women's promotion at the time.
All right, cool. Now, in December, this was going to lead to a big show on December 10th at Kurokan Hall. They also did shows, like I said, in Osaka, Aichi, Shizuoka, and Saitama. And Onita is not in the main event of all of these shows. I think he's in the main event of half of them, maybe three of them, but there's one where he's not. Was Onita already seen as the definite ace, or was there wiggle room to see like what the fans might want?
He was definitely the ace. The promotion was always to get his name out there, to make him a star. He was always going to be the boss. He was always going to be the ace as long as he was in charge of FMW. Pretty much for that show, I think Dick Murdoch possibly headlined it. It was something, you know, to let, you know, a legend, you know, that was above Onita at the time, you know, main event the show, because Onita didn't fit that main event. It didn't fit him, tagging with Dick Murdoch at that time or something. You know, I think it was a Dick Murdoch singles match maybe. And so it just was out of respect to Dick Murdoch or the other guys that, you know, also wrestled the main event. And it was just he was still, I think, the semi-main event and everything like that. So, he still got his name out there and everything.
Okay, great. Going back to the whole hardcore thing, the December 4th show was main evented by a street fight. December 6th would have a chain match. On the 8th, we would have a street fight. Who was the person pushing for these hardcore style matches?
Onita. I mean, he knew, you know, he knew eventually that's how FMW was going to stand out. He knew that his knee was still messed up from the injury 4 or 5 years earlier. He knew he couldn't, you know, just wrestle. He couldn't be a Misawa or a Jumbo Tsuruta or, you know, a Muto. He couldn't be like that work rate wise. He knew he was going to need to take shortcuts as well. And so this was a way to, you know, kind of stand out without having to work, you know, a 25 minute hard style match. Because his knees just weren't going to be able to keep up with it.
Were these hardcore style matches, were they still a new thing, or had these been done previously?
They had been done previously somewhat in the IWE promotion, which was an old promotion in the 70s that you would use chain matches and cage matches and everything like that. So it had been done, but the promotion had been closed for over 10 years at that time. So it was something new to a lot of people, but it wasn't the very, very, you know, first ever hardcore style in Japan, but it kind of was the first one to kind of stick out to the media and everything.
Cool. Now, the December 10th show at Kurokan, they contained a Indian strap match, American street fight chain match, and the main event was a barbed wire death match. Were these stipulations were they advertised beforehand?
Yeah, it was promoted as the deathmatch show. Look, you know, come here and see these kind of matches. You know, see this barbed wire match, which had not been done in Japan. You know, been done in, you know, Puerto Rico and whatnot, but it had never been done in Japan. You know, see this kind, these styles of matches that you're not used to seeing. So that was the promotion of the show on top of, hey, come see Onita.
Awesome. And also on the show, there were matches with women and midgets. Were mixed cards like this common to have, like, you know, women, midgets, hardcore?
No, this was definitely, you know, to stick make FNW stick out. You know, there had been midgets in All Japan Women's promotion, actually. They had used midgets, but, you know, for men, women, and midgets, you know, this was the first time to just use all different style of, you know, and to use hardcore as well. So it was just kind of everything, throw everything out there, see what sticks.
Awesome. Now, the main event, which this was actually the first FMW match I saw, because if you bought the Best of Onita Volume 1 through 3, which was a 6-hour tape, this was the first match on it. The main event was a barbed wire match between Onita and Tarzan Zangoto versus Matsunaga and Jerry Blayman, who went on to be Jerry Flynn, I'm sorry, of WCW. I'm guessing that those guys were through the WKKA Fed, right?
Yeah, they were Oyagi students. So pretty much, you know, they had already done Onita and Oyagi had, you know, fought in October, and when Onita finally won, Oyagi, you know, hugged him. It was kind of like a, you did it and everything, kind of like the end of a movie and whatnot. So where do you go from there? Well, you have the students, you know, try and gain revenge of, you know, their fallen teacher and challenge Onita, and then that's when they created the barbed wire style.
Awesome. Now, I have so many questions about this, and I don't know what order to ask them. Basically, was there any pushback from the WKKA in doing these death matches?
Not that I've ever heard of or anything like that. I mean, as you know, Matsunaga is pretty much game for anything. You know, I mean, he pretty much realized how much of it, you know, he loved death matches from this match right here. So there was, you know, it was a way to get their guys also attention, and, you know, a main event at Corrigan Hall, you know, not that many people were doing that back then. So it was, you know, it was a way to stick out, and yeah, their guys would, you know, go through barbed wire and everything, but it was actually, you know, Onita pretty much took the brunt of the punishment in this match anyway. So their guy, you know, Matsunaga and Jerry Flynn didn't come away, you know, very beat up like Onita did.
Yeah. And also, if you watch the tape, Jerry Flynn is actually, he's listed as Jerry Grayman, so I just wanted to throw that out there as well. Now, the barbed wire is outside the ropes. It's not like the no-rope barbed wire or Caribbean-style wire that you've seen normally. I've never seen a match like this. How did they come up with the idea of putting the barbed wire outside the ropes? I mean, was this done previously in, like, Memphis, Puerto Rico?
I've never really seen it done that way. I think it really was just to not have to take the ropes down. It was just easier, you know, having to undo the ropes and everything takes time and whatnot. And they probably just figured at the time that, you know, they didn't have much experience doing this, that it would just be easier just to wrap the barbed wire around the ropes. And that would get the point across anyway.
Cool. And by what would become FMW standards, how does this deathmatch hold, like, do you think that it holds up now?
What is stands out about this is the barbed wire, you know, there's been tons of barbed wire matches and everything, but especially, you know, if Onita has one these days and a barbed wire match, they go through they hit the barbed wire and, you know, Onita will sell it and whatnot, but you don't see that many scars or anything like this. This match, Onita hits the barbed wire and his arm starts gushing. He cuts his arm deep just to get over the barbed wire in this match. You know, I mean, it's still a scar on his arm to this day with how deep he cut it, you know. So it was, that's what really stood out as, you know, just a barbed wire match, you know, seems tame, you know, 28 years later. But at the time, it was Onita cutting himself deep to get the barbed wire stipulation over.
Awesome. Now, It's worth watching. It's a good wild brawl. You know, at this time they were still doing the karate pro wrestling, so it was a lot of brawling, and it's very wild. I think it's definitely worth watching. Now after this series, FMW, they would continue. They would start up the second tour in January, about a month later. But after this, WKA would end their relationship with FMW. Do you know why?
I think it's just moving on. I think they had already done everything that they could with them. You know, the whole main thing with WKA was to get Onita over as someone that could beat, you know, a shoot style fighter, and he did that. So I think they just kind of realized, okay, we've gone as far as we can. You know, I think the WKA actually started working with New Japan after this. So it was just kind of, I think, a mutual agreement to just part ways and FMW kind of focus on creating their own brand, because the karate style mixed martial arts with wrestling had just kind of, you know, they couldn't keep doing it, I think they realized.
If the WKA partnership was ending, why did they keep the FMW name, you know, the martial arts name?
It had already been established. That was the name, you know. They probably would have messed up marketing and everything, because they, you know, it was already starting to build momentum and everything. And actually, like 4 or 5 years later, Onita actually did legally change the name to just FMW. There was no meaning behind the initials towards the end of his run. But, you know, at the beginning, you know, he just kept the name just because that's what, you know, that's what it's known as now.
Cool. Just to ask, you mentioned on your site that Wally Yamaguchi left. He was one of the, you know, the founding fathers of the company. Do you know why he left and what maybe he took with him?
It really isn't that many details about him, other than, you know, he worked for Wrestling Gong, so he had a full-time job already. You know, he was a columnist and everything for a high-end magazine. So I believe he, you know, just kind of got helped start the promotion, but I think he pulled away pretty soon after, because I don't see any information on him as far as FMW goes when it comes to 1990 stuff. So I think he really was just there the first month or so to help things out, and then, you know, pretty much just decided, I'm not going to work for a touring promotion or anything when I already have a full-time job.
All right, cool. And finally, what is the reaction of the press, the fans, the wrestlers after this series of shows, and what is the internal feeling of the health going into 1990?
It's gaining momentum. I mean, every show is getting bigger and bigger. Onita's getting a bigger name. FMW is getting stronger and stronger. You know, it's starting to, people are starting to realize, what is this promotion? What is this? You know, it's, the bloody matches and everything. Those are doing really well for magazines, because that's how kind of word spread back then, was through the magazines in Japan. All Japan and the New Japan matches are better, but you get a magazine, you can't see how great of a match is really, you know, just based off pictures. But you look at FMW, you see Onita bleeding, you see barbed wire, you see these crazy death matches and everything. Those stick out in pictures. So, you know, it had a smaller fan base. So it obviously was never New Japan, All Japan, but it was, you know, becoming a, you know, bona fide number three promotion based off what it provided to, you know, the magazines and word of mouth.
It sounds similar to Bill Apter. He said several times that if you put a big bloody face on the cover of of a PWI, it's going to sell way better than a picture of Jerry Lawler posing with his belt, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So, all right, well, we're going to end it there, and we're going to come back in about 2 weeks or so, and we're going to talk about 1991, I'm sorry, 1990. But before we go, I just wanted to see if you – I know that you just kind of did your big update for your site. If you want to let us know what's going on with FMW and Onita as we lead into the final matches.
Pretty much, he's just the big, I guess, news that came away from the last couple of weeks was that one of the shows that was supposed to have Onita versus Onita and the FMW guys versus Tremont and the CCW guys, it got canceled. Pretty much due to poor ticket sales, but the issue really was it was put in a very large location at a yacht club essentially. And so that fits over 900 people in the space. And they held a show there back in July with Suwama from All Japan, one of the All Japan top guys. And, you know, it did a pretty good number. And they figured that, you know, we can have another Onita match here in the same location and whatnot with Tremont and the CCW guys. Well, that's, you know, ticket sales were not picking up. So they end up getting a different location in Tokyo, by the Tokyo Bay, and they're gonna have the match pretty much the next day instead. So they canceled the first show, and they just pretty much changed it to Tokyo, where it'll probably be Onita, Yaguchi and Hosaka versus Tremont, DJ Hyde, and Tony Myers in a no ropes exploding barbed wire match.
Okay, cool. And they haven't done an actual no rope exploding match in quite a while, right?
No, they actually did. It actually had been a while until last month when Onita took on Shiguza Nagoya All Japan Women's fame. They had a no rope barbed wire match last month, but before that, yeah, it had been about almost 2 years or so. But now Onita's actually going to have a couple here next month for his retirement month.
Cool. And if you want to, you know, cherry pick a few, is there any match coming up that you think will be better than usual?
The match that stands out, there's actually going to be one. I don't know if I'll be able to watch it because the usually doesn't come out. But the A-Team promotion, they're going to have a show in Okinawa on a beach. And it's going to have an Onita exploding barbed wire match. And like I said, it's going to be on the beach. So it's a falls count anywhere match. And they said, like, the rules are, pinfall, or if you dunk your opponent in the beach or in the ocean for 10 seconds, that counts as a victory. Or if you dig your opponent in the sand for, 15 seconds, then that counts as a victory. So it's probably going to be just one of these wild, crazy matches. I don't know if it's going to make tape, but it'll at least come out. Interesting pictures will come out from it. Also, I don't know if this is going to be a good match per se, but since we're talking about it, actually, Onita is going to be taking on Ayagi again on October 29th in Nagoya. It's going to be a tag match, a tag explosion match. It was confirmed this past weekend. So it'll be Onita and a mystery partner against Oyagi and the MMA fighter, Minnow Woman. And so Onita's going to face Oyagi one last time 2 days before his retirement.
That's awesome. I can't wait for that. And just two final ones really quickly. Is there any future news on Onita's final opponent, or is that still a mystery?
Tokyo Sports is reporting that it's going to be Kazuyuki Fujita, who is a former Onoki guy. I know that's going to be a disappointment if that's the case. Fujita hasn't even really wrestled in a couple of years. I do know that Onita has always wanted to fight Onoki, and with Onoki retired, this is kind of the closest thing he can get. But that's what Tokyo Sports is reporting, but it's nothing official. There's no, this is the official match, and it's not been, anything like that. There still is the Terry Funk speculation, but that really goes down to Terry Funk's going to have a match in North Carolina next week, I believe, and he's going to even be able to see if he could even compete, if he can wrestle again anyway. So I think they're kind of holding out on that as well. So, but right now, I think the chances are it'll be Fujita, who, like I said, was, you know, he wrestled in New Japan kind of during the dark days. He was the champion in like 05 or so. He's going to, you know, it's probably going to be that's probably the heavy favorite. But I would guess it would be a tag match also. Because it would be bad. It would not be a good match.
Yeah, that's a little bit of the air falling out of the sails. And finally, you posted that FMW, well, Super Fight FMW, they announced their first tour post Onita retiring. Will Onita stay with the company in any role, or do you think this will be something new?
I've never heard him. I think he's going to be gone from the promotion. You know, so they're going to run a show November 10th at Shinkiba, which is, you know, not a big building, but it's a decent sized building for them. This is, you know, for this promotion, it's, you know, kind of a small promotion. It's kind of one of their bigger, you know, buildings that they run and whatnot, especially as far as media attention and being in Tokyo. So they're, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what really is going to happen. And I actually asked Ricky Fuji last year when I spoke with him, you know, what's the plan as far as this promotion goes once Onita retires? Because Onita's known he's going to be the plan for Onita to retire in October 2017 has been known for 3 years now. So, you know, and I asked him, and he really didn't have any idea. He said maybe, you know, there'll be another new Hayabusa, you know, to come into place. But, you know, back then with the old FMW, they were able to, you know, kind of build up, you know, their younger guys. This promotion, it's just been Onita 100%. And, you know, the undercard workers aren't good workers. So, you know, they might have to pull in somebody from a different promotion or come in with a different gimmick. It'll be interesting to see. But Onita, as far as I know, he's going to be completely out of the picture.
All right, cool. And for those who are curious, we record this on September 13th, 2017. So that's where the news is coming from. So, Brett, Bahu, this was super fun. Thank you so much for doing this. If you want to let people know where they can find you online.
BahuFMW.com, on Twitter, BahuFMW, BahuFMW. And then on Instagram, every 4 days or so, I post about 15 pictures, just random pictures of FMW I find from the 90s and early 2000s. And it's at BahuFMW World on Instagram.
Awesome. And you can find me at indiewrestlingintl.wordpress.com. I post twice a week. I do indie updates, just kind of collating all of this information from a bunch of sites. And I write a couple articles. So, and we do these podcasts, which is super fun. I love this project, and I can't wait to keep going forward. So, Brett, if you have nothing else to say, we can sign off till next week.
All right. See you. Thank you.
See you later.